Welcome to the Generous Business Owner Podcast, where business owners gain inspiration and encouragement to live a legacy, not just leave one. And now your hosts, Jeff Thomas, Alan Barnhart, and Jeff Rutt.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's Generous Business Owner Podcast. My name is Jeff Thomas, and I've got my co-host with me, Jeff Rutt. Say hello to the people, Jeff.
Hello to the people.
Hello to the people. And I always want to say power to the people. I don't even know what it means, but I just have to say it. And we actually have two special guests today. We have Claire Hoover, who is a business owner specializing in commercial real estate acquisition and management. And we also have his friend, Cheryl Byrne, with us. Well, first of all, Claire, say hello.
Hi.
There you go. And then Cheryl, say hello.
Hello.
Cheryl is a regional representative for Hope International and introduced us to Claire. So we'd like her perspective a little bit too on Claire's story. So Cheryl, don't be shy. Jump right in there if you've got a question and we will step aside because we'd like to hear what you have to say. But Jeff, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah. Claire, kick us off with, tell us about the early years. We want to hear some stories about the early years. What was childhood like in the Claire Hoover family? Maybe if there are any stories about illegal activity in junior high related to entrepreneurship, we want to hear about those too. I think you're past the statute of limitations, but spiritual development, hard work ethic, you know, just tell us about Claire.
Born in Lancaster County and amazing little part of the world. We were just talking about that before we started recording. And born on a dairy farm. And I think that's where I learned my work ethic. Yeah, you as well, Jeff. I think we have that in common. Dairy farms are interesting. You are born as a laborer and it's 7 days a week. My dad used to joke with our friends that we would milk the cows really good on Saturday and take off Sunday. Those of you involved in dairy know that's not correct. I learned my work ethic from my dad. Good or bad, if I wanted to spend time with them, we were working. He had very little time beyond that. It's just the nature of the farm. I don't regret that. I loved growing up. Often said I want my children to have the work ethic of a farm, but I couldn't figure out how to do that without being a farmer. And that was a conflict for me. Every son needs three things from his dad. It's my understanding. You need to tell him to tell you that he loved you, that he's proud of you, and tell you what you're good at. My dad did great on the first two. The third one, he didn't know what to do with. He was frustrated with where he was left in life, a very hard life, and went through a couple of different farms and never achieved what the world would consider success in those areas. But family was tight. We had a great time. But the third thing, dad didn't know what to do with and tell me what I was good at. All he told me was, don't do what I've done. He knew that I was wired different, and that was hard. So kind of had to find my own way, but through his encouragement, I ended up getting a college degree, two degrees, actually, one in accounting and one in computer science. And that combination really played out well. 13 years in the corporate world, started out in accounting and transitioned into IT, did a lot of consulting and finished out those 13 years as one of the youngest chief information officers in the United States, just a really neat set of hops. I could see, looking back, I could see God's hand on it. During the time, it was happening so fast, I didn't know what was going on. But 13 years in corporate world, and then had a couple of friends sat down, held up a picture of what at that point were two sons, about 8 and 6 years old, if I recall, held that picture up. And my best friends in the world, who I wanted to be proud of me and my accomplishments, looked at me and said, these two boys have everything in the world except a dad. That was a wake up call. And it took me 2 weeks. Three of them together was too much. I went and picked one of them that I was closest to. And it took me 2 weeks to get over the hurt and sit down and hear the truth. And months later, I left the corporate world and started building my own businesses.
Wow. Wow. Back up a little bit, Claire. Talk about spiritual formation, a little bit more your walk with Jesus, maybe going from, you know, kind of the early childhood through that young adult and then into your family formation.
Yep. So born into a Christian home, absolutely. We were part of the Mennonite area in Lancaster, so grew up with a lot of that tradition. I've got an uncle who's still a pastor in the Mennonite church, and another uncle who is a bishop in the Mennonite church, so still strongly tied to that. We're part of a non-denominational church now, but taught early on the ways of God. The Bible read to me by my parents. Chose a different path for a few years. You mentioned illegal activities. By illegal activities, Jeff, are we talking about the ones we got caught at or just all the stuff we did?
And well, we may not have time for all of that, but whatever you're comfortable sharing.
Convicted? Never convicted.
No, it wasn't, quite that crazy, but there was definitely the teenage years, and I think it's in the Bible that tells us as parents to invest in our children, but be comfortable with a time when they're trying to find their own way. I think the biggest wake-up call for me, and it's going to be a strange one, is my parents chose to invest in Christian education from elementary school and then high school. And I really appreciated that. I took 1 year of college at a Christian school, and something inside of me, I know looking back, it was God. At the time, it didn't make sense and probably scared my parents a little bit, but I needed to get out of Christian education. Remember saying out loud to my roommate, who our plan was to go through Messiah College together and finish there. And I looked at him and I said, I got to get out of here. And he said, why? I said, I need to find out what I believe. I've been told my whole life what I believe, but I've never been tested. Mm-hmm. I transferred to Millsboro University, a very secular school. And I don't know how to explain it. My faith grew. No longer was I in a sheltered environment being told what to believe. I got to find out. And I personally was a little worried about it. I was pleasantly surprised how much God had my heart at that point and how easy it was to stand apart. And I know the reason God called me there was to be salt and light in a world that needed it. And Messiah didn't need any more light or salt. It was well taken care of. Millersville did. Mm-hmm. So a real wake-up call for me that God will move you into interesting spaces to grow you. That was, I would say, the beginning of a real relationship with my favorite person in the world, Lord Jesus Christ.
That's awesome. So talk about, and then we're going to move on to, I'm going to let Jeff talk with you a little bit, just have a conversation about your career and some of the things that you've been able to do in the philanthropic world. But talk a little bit about how you integrated that faith then into, as you formed, you know, your immediate family.
So, one of the biggest challenges in the world is when children arrive. And my wife and I sat down. This is a conversation I'm not sure I would encourage with every spouse, but I chose it. We were married about 5 years, and I think she may have brought up, hey, this kid thing would be kind of cool. I literally sat down with my wife and I said, I know we're both committed to this marriage, but bringing children into the world, I need us both looking each other's eyes and recommit that divorce is never an option. Because us messing with each other and hurting each other through a divorce is one thing. Hurting innocent children, I don't want to be a part of that. So we literally recommitted our marriage to no divorce option. Every ounce of energy will be on solving conflict, not dreaming about separating. And at that point, our kids came into the world, and that was the foundation of our marriage. Because we love you, your mom and dad will always be together. We promise we will work through any conflict. And our family, now we're in business together, by the way, and the commitment to work through conflict instead of using energy to hurt each other is powerful. Yeah. And it's become the foundation of our family. We promised our kids they would always be in a two-family home, and now we have businesses. And that is a daily prayer that God would protect our business and our relationships as we minister through business.
Wow. That's awesome. I really believe God blesses that.
So, Claire, now, you kind of left us with a little bit of a cliffhanger until Jeff kind of took you back to your childhood. But did we hear you correctly that you said, okay, 13 years in the corporate world, and then you had literally a bit of a come to Jesus moment? Maybe unpack that a little bit more for us, if you don't mind.
Well, the come to Jesus moment was three friends. We had met for breakfast about once a month. We all traveled. We're all heavily involved in corporate careers. And we got together. It was rich. We were all out to conquer the world, but also determined not to lose our faith in the process. And it was an amazing group. I wanted them to be proud of me and be as excited about what was happening in my world as possible. We were all four successful in our own ways, but I never dreamed I'd get the opportunities I did. The moment your friends sit down and see what happened to you as a negative, not a positive, that's a pretty big paradigm shift. And I am so grateful to have friends that were strong enough to confront me. And I am thankful to a God who still had my heart soft enough to hear them. Mm. And the cliffhanger is I offered 6 months to transition. Very difficult to hang around 6 months when they were leaving. I probably turned into closer to 3 months, but I didn't want to leave the company hanging. They took a big chance on me as a very young CIO. The cliffhanger part of it cut my income in half. That was scary. We were living well beneath our means. I grew up in the Larry Kid era, so spending the extra money for Kraft macaroni and cheese was not allowed. We had to eat that white quality stuff, according to Larry. But luckily, we had the margin and the savings to take a pay cut to transition into owning my own businesses. Long story short, within 2 years, I had my income back, but I was working out of my home. I was at every kid's sporting event, and I chose my travel schedule. So I knew God would take me that direction. I couldn't believe he was able to do it in 2 years. That is everything, all the math I can do, all the accounting in me, all of the projections I could have done would have never, ever got me there within 2 years.
Wow. And what do you think was at the core of the issue that they confronted you about?
Let's start with 280 days of travel per year.
Wow.
I think this is still a joke, and I had to get my wife to tell me whether it's a joke or not. But I was told at one point, one of the children asked, is that man going to be eating at our house tonight? That man was me, and I hoped she was joking. But I message heard, message received, and I would do the 13 years again, by the way. I don't see that all as a mistake. I think God ordained it, and it created some of the relationships that allowed me to transition and pivot into being a business owner, and certainly create the work ethic. I'm not sure what had to add about it.
It also probably create a lot of airline miles and Marriott points. That's a whole other.
We still have some of those airline miles, and still, I'm a fan of the rapture. But honestly, I told my wife I had a nightmare that the rapture happened, and we still had 600,000 Marriott points. I'm like, God, no. We need another. Another 2 weeks. That's all.
You got to burn them. You got to burn them. So now that's not easy. Okay. So you get confronted by your friends who you think are going to be all excited about you, you know, winning in business, and they do the reverse and confront you with issues that they think you need to address. And you took those to heart and make a big change, but that's not easy to do. So in a couple of years, you were able to replace the income, but how did you figure out what to do? I mean, a CIO who goes into real estate, you don't hear that every day. So talk about that transition, if you don't mind.
Well, I knew in the corporate world, I didn't want to spend the next 40 years. The CIO role, by the way, every day you wake up, what you knew yesterday is no longer valid. The IT world, technology changes so fast. If you're on your game, and I thrived on that, but I also knew it was the young man's game. So I'm 30 years old at the time. Something new at 50 years old, I didn't want to wake up every day not being able to coast a little bit on what I already knew. So there was already something inside of me, and this goes back to a little bit of a story with my dad. He was injured on the job. He was left the farm at some point and was driving truck and was a victim of a crime. Someone actually attacked him thinking there was cash in the truck. And they left him for dead. I was, I believe, at Messiah College. I got a phone call, said, you got to run down to the Lancaster Hospital as quick as possible. Your dad's not going to make it. They flew a specialist in from somewhere in Texas who knew how to patch him back together. Basically, he took a crowbar to the back of his head and should have killed him. A specialist saved his life. He ended up with a non-cancerous brain tumor or aneurysm, depending how you want to describe it. And at 21 years old, our family was told that my dad was a ticking time bomb, that the aneurysm would burst at some point and he would be instantly gone. That changes family dynamics in a lot of ways. I'm the oldest son. That gave me some responsibility I wasn't counting on. My mom had to start planning life without him while he's still there. It just changed everything. I thought about just helping my parents by writing checks and supporting them, which God gave us the margin to be able to do. But I didn't like the idea of giving my dad charity. I saw a lot of potential in him. So I actually talked him into going business with me. And this was all part of my plan that at 50 years old, I didn't want to still be in the corporate world. So why not start some entrepreneurial things now? My dad needed a partner and some help. So we started a trucking company together. We literally flipped a coin. He had a background in real estate. And we were a little pizza shop. I can still picture one of the biggest, you ask about valleys. Yeah, this is one of the biggest mistakes I ever made. I don't know what I was thinking. He had experience with real estate. I said, hey, we could buy apartments and you could oversee the maintenance and, improvements. He'd be great at it with his construction background, but he also had trucking. And so we started a trucking company. We flipped a coin. Dumbest thing I've ever done. It came up trucking. The worst mistake we ever made. I don't know what. We should have met with business owners. The trucking guys would be smoking 2 cigarettes. Their eyes are bloodshot. They're 2 days from bankruptcy. And the real estate guys probably just got off the golf course with a nice tan. I would have picked the right one, but we didn't. 13 years in trucking. And the goal was to be able to create a retirement options for my dad he wouldn't normally have. And we were able to do it. We sold the trucking company and him and mom were taken care of financially.
Wow.
So that was the beginning of the entrepreneurial stuff, but I knew trucking was just a hard. And I was always interested in real estate, and opportunity came along to try that out while I was still working in the corporate world. So it was a fairly smooth transition. Felt safer than jumping immediately.
Okay, these are radical shifts in my mind. I mean, to me, to you, it's probably super logical, but I think that most of us listening, you're like, okay, off the dairy farm. We somehow end up in IT. Now we're doing trucking, and then there's real estate involved. So, I mean, was there a seminar on self storage? I mean, what happened?
Well, this all comes under one caption: "Tell God your plans, and you'll make him laugh."
Yeah. Well, and just for our listeners, give our listeners some idea of the scale of your self storage. This is not just a couple self storage units.
Yeah, it started out pretty slow. So I ended up buying, we needed some land for the trucking company. We ended up doing a purchase that included a mobile home park, which I was always interested in. I liked residential real estate. I didn't like the idea of hot water heaters breaking in the middle of the night. And I saw mobile home parks as a way of getting involved, but not owning the trailers. So we ended up with a mobile home park and a very small self-storage. The plan was run the mobile home park, subdivide and sell the self-storage off. Year into it, I was like, whoa, this self-storage is a lot easier. I see more potential in this mobile home park. Not really interested in, but I think, again, I know this was part of God's plan, diversify. So I had I got pretty heavily involved in 5 different asset classes. We had mobile home parks, self-storage, apartments, car washes, and laundromats. And it was a great way to go. I said it taught me 2 things. Number one, what does the world like? Well, the world ended up liking self-storage out of all those asset classes better than any. And secondly, what do I enjoy running? So we did that for about 10 years, about 5 years ago. Both my sons were just wrapped up college, and both surprised me and were interested in joining my business. Took a quick look at it, and I looked at the effort to teach them 5 asset classes. By the way, I think I was about average in those 5 things. I think wisdom tells you at some point, pick 1 or 2 and become great in those. Well, with my sons coming in, the effort to teach them or convince them to be interested in 5 asset classes didn't make sense. It was time to trim it down. So a lot of 1031 exchanges, sold off just about everything and transferred into self-storage at that point. That gave us a great launching pad. We are now cracked the top 100 owners in the world of self-storage. We have, I was just doing the math yesterday. I think we have 750,000 square feet. We have about 25 facilities, and we're in 11 states. So, and roughly 5,000 doors or 5,000 units. So it, my sons remind me that a lot of that, I think 80% of that happened since they came on board. I also remind them 80% of my debt happened since they came on board. So,
And 100% of their life was dependent on you existing. So that, there's that. But
by the way, most fun I've ever had, and it goes back to that breakfast meeting. My 3 friends, I owe them a debt of gratitude for the time I get to spend working together with my sons today, and the amount of success it's given us. So I'd used some godly men to talk to me about some things that were incredibly hard to hear, and it. Man, I'm so glad.
So,
hey, Claire.
So Cheryl, I was going to say, Cheryl, jump in here.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in there. So just like you said, speaking truth and love from these godly men, I think, I don't know if the audience knows how well involved you or highly involved you are in men's ministry. And, you know, shifting your priorities to family as a woman and a wife, you know, helping that next generation become the godly men that the younger women need and crave in today. Like, how are you instilling those values into your son about generational, not only business planning, but like generational generosity and, you know, being involved in local community and, you know, nonprofits and supporting those kind of things? How do you do that?
So there are, I live on quotes. I absolutely love them. They inspire me. I have a 280 page document just loaded with quotes, and I keep prioritizing them. When it comes to my sons, I would say there's two things. This was my local church. First message they taught on parenting. Our pastor stood up and he said, how many of you out there have asked yourselves, can I trust God with my kids? And I was one of the people who raised my hand. It was a question I had. God, this is a big responsibility. Are you sure you know what you're doing? If you are, I'll listen to you. He shook his head and he said, you got it wrong. Question is, can God trust you with his kids? That stuck with me even through today. And now we have grandchildren. I want to pass that down to them. The second thing with kids, absolutely, they cannot hear you. They can only see you. Hmm. So I have chosen not to waste time with words on them. I demonstrate it. So another paradigm shift, Jeff, if you're counting the crazy shifts. I'm not a risk taker, by the way. I fight with God on all of these. And he eventually wins. I'm trying to stay out of the belly of a whale. You fight him too much, and apparently that's where you end up. I go right to the edge where that whale's ready to chomp and finally say, okay, I trust you again. There was a time, I'm going to say mid-30s, we're in the middle of the corporate world, we're living way beneath our means, and God keeps blessing us, but we just had this calling not to increase our expenses, and that allowed for that transition when the time came to be able to cut. I didn't know why, I just knew God was saying, stay in your original house, all of those things. We drove old cars a whole bit. At some point, we were writing a check, I think, to our church, and God just hit me. Something struck me that it was pretty easy to write that check. And I watched other friends who were struggling. They were making different choices where financially. And I thought about this guy who, without complaining, went to the cross for me. And I'm not trying to buy my salvation. I'm certainly not trying to write bigger checks and think that's my way into heaven. I just wanted to show this guy more love than writing a check. This is a guy who hung on a cross for me, and he was completely innocent. And I remember hearing something in my head that said, you know what? Your time is more important to you than your money. Why don't you start giving that? I had an interesting discussion. I don't know if you can cut deals with God. We're trying to build businesses in the evening. I'm working full-time in a corporate world. And I hear God saying, I want you to start donating some of your time to my kingdom. Now, I had a real serious conversation with God. I said, okay, I'm a math guy. Your math doesn't make sense to me. And so I need a promise from you. I need you to promise me that if I cut back on my corporate hours or the time I'm putting in and building these businesses, that you will make my time ultra productive, or somehow you'll bless that time so that my time donated to you won't hurt us. I had people counting on me. We have employees. I've certainly got a family. And eventually wanted a future with the kids. I don't know if you can cut deals with God, but I started donating 10% of my time, and then 20, and then 30. Today, if I looked at it carefully, I'm probably around 60% of my time is non-profit producing, donated to my local church and to some of the national religious organizations. And I believe God's kept his promise. Our self-storage is right up there. In fact, we outperform most of our competition. And then we have the answer for it. I'm not that lucky and I'm not that good. I think God does keep promises, and I think he asked me to do that. And I am busier. By the way, I retired at 40 for maybe a week and a half till I realized our marriage wasn't going to survive a 40-year-old retired guy. I think my wife was the one to suggest. She kept telling me I was too busy, and a week and a half later, you need to do something. So anyway, I'm busier now than I was in my 40s. And my 40-year-old, if I looked at my future calendar, I would ask you what went wrong. my plan was to be very selfish, retire, and spend my time on a beach and maybe play a little bit of golf. And if you look at my calendar now, that's not what I'm doing. God, when you hand God the pen, he's going to write a different story, and it is going to be so much better and so much richer than any story you think you can write.
Amen. What is your biggest, what do you find to be the biggest thing that you can share with your boys and men in general for how they can develop and be a godly husband and a godly father? What's your best advice that you can give?
It was telling someone when you're trained, my background again is accounting. I started out at a local accounting firm, thought I was going to be a CPA before the IT thing came along. And we serve a God who says, don't look back. You'll be ridden with guilt. Don't look forward. You'll have fear. But I will give you grace for today. And he challenges us to live in the moment. Well, you overlay that with an accountant. They call us controllers, first of all. We're paid to control things. But we're also paid to lay out 10, 15, 20-year plans and execute them. We overlay that trying to serve a God who says, today is all that matters to me. That's a paradigm shift. And so I think if there's anything I would tell my sons, they know my journey. They got to see it. They got to see how God blesses it. And my sons, I'd say about 6 months into our businesses, they finally figured out that Dad's not as smart as the business makes him look. Our success was way beyond who I am. Mm-hmm. And I think it was we were on our way to a meeting, and my youngest son, it was a meeting we didn't expect. It was a competitor of mine called up and wanted us to buy him out at a very attractive price. And we got my son on the way asked me, Dad, why do these opportunities keep coming? And I just said, look, it's three things. We do work hard. We have a good work ethic. We're a little bit smarter than people think we are. But the third thing is we are ethical because we serve a God who asks us to be. I see the other two things throughout the world. I travel a lot. I get to speak at the large storage conferences. I see hard work and I see smart people. I rarely see good ethics, integrity. And when you put those three things together, God brings that third piece. The first two, I think he can bless. But first two, a lot about to us, the integrity piece. I just want to start. And that's what I want to pass along to my sons and teach them to live today, not regret with yesterday and not worrying about tomorrow, but live in the moment. And for us, that's very simple. We wake up each day and we ask God for our assignment today. And it's often a lot different than we think. And most days I get that right. When I don't, I know it. I get ahead of them, behind them, or in the way. And Cheryl, you might appreciate this one. I lead a men's ministry at our local church. We've had 14,000 men came through that thing in the last 17 years. And one of the things we tell the men to go home and tell their wives, and that is that sometimes a wife gets in the way, a godly wife will get in the way. And sometimes the best thing a godly wife can do is duck when God takes a swing at her husband.
Hmm.
My wife always liked that one a little too much.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Unpack that. What does that mean?
I'll use my oldest son as an example. We were extremely close growing up, and I somehow had a vision someday we'd work together, and I worked really hard. We talked to them a lot. I took them to an airport one time, I believe around Christmas, to show them what it looks like if you marry a spouse from California, what your Christmas is going to look like. It's stressful. So encourage them, if at all possible, let's try to make the East Coast our family home. Just really hard to keep everything tight. My son inherited my sense of adventure. I think they call us nomads or gypsy souls. And we need to see the world. I just love travel. And my son, I think 17, 18 years old, headed out west. He loves the mountains. And we spent about a third of our year now together as a family in Utah just because of him and his wife's passion for mountains. I was heartbroken and a little bit frustrated with how emotional I got when my son left home for the first time. He said he'd be gone about 3 months and then he'd be back. I didn't have faith that he would. I knew he loved the mountains and thought that was it. That close family always when it's gone. God woke me up about 3 o'clock one morning and I was begging with God, you know, why is my son gone? This is not what I pictured. And I heard him clearly say, I have work to do with your son because of who you are and the resources you have, you get in the way. And I need to teach them some things I can't teach without with you in the way. And I would say the same thing with a godly wife. Sometimes she is protecting her husband when God needs to do some work. So there's wisdom in knowing. By the way, my son came back with a bunch of the rough edges. He was an amazing young man, no complaints. But God had some work to do to turn him into the man he wanted him to be. And it couldn't be done with me there. He came back a very different person. We have, he's one of my closest friends in the world today. And I think a lot of it was because of that season where God had him alone and was able to work with him in ways that I would have blocked. So good question, Jeff. Answer it.
Yeah. And I think I want to highlight something else that you brought up. One of the exercises we take families through is you mentioned something very early about three things children need to hear. And I think it's not just sons. I think it's daughters as well. You know, you talked about, you know, that they're loved. You talked about that you're proud of them and something you're good at. And you said that's not something you heard from your father. One of the things we encourage parents to do is write a letter of blessing to their children, which is essentially what you're saying, which is tell them something they're good at. What have you told your sons that they are good at?
Yeah, so I'd make that I would hope weekly. It might be even more frequently than that. They're each good at different things. And in business, I've been taught for every two times I need to correct someone or call them up, I should have eight times I encourage them. Try to follow that rule with my sons. It might be 9 out of 10. I'm going to mess that one up. They're both incredibly good at different things. They, by the way, are best friends. This was an interesting one. They just built their dream home side by side. I have idea how they talk to their spouse. My sons grew up with no cousins near them, and their dream always was that their kids would have cousins play with. They literally were sharing backyards, and I don't know how they talk their spouses into it, there's all kinds of scripture in the Bible that tells you how to raise children, and if you do it, what a blessing they'll be. And it is probably one of the happiest things that we get to enjoy is family time and watching our sons enjoy life together. I often think about how I remember sneaking up one time. I was my two sons, we'd just gone on business together in my office. And I don't eavesdrop, but I went to go through the door and I heard this weird conversation. I got to listen. So I just stepped for a second. They were deciding the dates on which they wanted to have their first kids. I listened long enough to walk in laughing my head off. I've been married long enough to know that the men don't make that decision. They said, boys, where have I failed you making you believe you have any impact? But I remember standing outside that door, my heart filled up that my two sons were planning life together. And I thought about how happy our Heavenly Father is. Jeff, when you and I met for the first time in your office, and the hour went so quick. Like you said, we felt like we were separated. But do you know the pleasure that God got that day was the same pleasure I got standing outside that door, listening to my kids love on each other.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. Same here.
What do you think, you know, and Cheryl did a good job of taking us down this road, but just to keep going some more, I know you do so much with men's ministry. And if there was one thing that you were going to communicate to a father, you know, what would it be to impart to their children?
And that's a hard one. I got a call 17 years ago from one of the pastors at our local church, and he asked me to take over the men's ministry. And I spent an hour on the phone saying no. At the end of the hour, he said, Claire, you and I are both busy. And if there weren't something inside you that was telling you you should at least try this, we want to spend an hour together. So I gave him all these ideas for an hour, hoping he would take them to somebody else and exactly. I could go on with the life I was enjoying. But he was right. There was a seed planted there many years ago. And so I made an agreement with him, said I will do it for 1 year, but men's ministry never works, no matter what I do. We had 80 men at the time in a church of 1,500 people. No matter what I do, it's going to fail. And you make me a promise, after that year of failure, you'll never call me again. Or at least never call me about this. We both hung up the phone thinking we had won. He was pretty sure God had told him that if I said yes, that this thing would take off. And I was pretty sure a year later, I'll never hear from him again. And I gave it a shot. That was the plan. We went from 80 men the first year to 250. God blessed everything we did. year three, we were doing 24 weeks a year, every week. That was a genius of the Men's Ministry Redevelopers Weekly, because we're not as smart as women think we are. If you give us weekly, we can remember every Thursday. We can't remember the second Thursday of every month. It worked. Anyway, we had 1,300 men meeting per week, and I am almost positive at that time we were the largest weekly men's gathering in the world. So God did bless it. I tell my sons the same thing I tell a lot of those men. One of the most common questions we have is, I've got a friend who wants nothing to do with Christianity, nothing to do with Jesus. What do I do? And my sons encouraged them to have non-Christian relationships, and they both did. The question is, how do I get that guy who's on a mountaintop and headed for disaster to listen? And the answer is, you don't. You stay in relationship so that when the gut shot comes, and I use the word when, not if, everybody has a gut shot. Nobody gets out of here alive. Maybe you're fortunate enough to get 70 good years and then the health issue hits. But something is going to hit along the way. Maybe it's a child who's making horrible choices, a divorce you didn't see coming, something. Make sure you're on the speed dial when that guy finally hits the bottom and reaches for help. Then you can tell him about the other pieces of your life that you know can help him. But just stay in relationship and wait. Be patient. That's God's timing, not yours. Your assignment from him, by the way, is stay in relationship, not to go fix it. You get ahead of him and you ruin everything.
So as we wrap up, that's so good. So as we wrap up, just kind of staying on this theme of practical tips. You know, the question we always ask at the end is for somebody behind you on the journey, right? You've had a very interesting career, corporate career, business you sold, then you get into real estate, that goes in, you got family business, you've got all these things. So there's a lot of directions, but just let the Spirit guide you on just a practical tip for somebody behind you on the journey that wants to use their business platform as something to be used for God's glory and generosity. What's just a practical tip or two that you might leave with them?
I don't know a lot about your listener base. I'm assuming a lot of them know about God. I don't know where they're in that relationship. But whether you know him or not, if you haven't heard, I'm not this good. I've been blessed in so many ways that I don't understand. I take it all back to trying. And I will use the word trying because I have failed miserably and I've gotten ahead of God and I've been selfish and I've made mistakes. But every time I get it right, he is amazing. So I would encourage you, wake up every morning and hand the pen to him. You got a blank page that's going to be filled at the end of the day. By the way, you're writing in ink, not pencil. You can't erase a single decision you're going to make the rest of today or tomorrow. But hand him that pen. I still wrestle with it out of his hand every now and then and question the story he's writing. But each day that he writes a good page, my faith grows that I should let him write it. And I'm a warrior by nature. Our message at church this past weekend was amazing on work. I had a friend ask me recently, he knows me well enough, and I know when he's asking questions here, he knows the answer. He said, Claire, are you good at taking your concerns to the cross? The Bible says, bring them to the cross and let them there. And I said, I'm pretty good at that. I wake up in the morning, and if I get woke up at 3 o'clock over worry, I will say, God, here's three things that really bother me, and I put them at the cross. My friend was wise enough and knows me well enough to ask the question, do you ever go back to the cross 24 hours later and say, hey, God, apparently you were busy. You didn't take care of these. I'll just take those back. And I do that. So it's all about letting him write the story. You're his child. He loves you more and he's smarter and has this amazing plan. They say that when God thinks about your future, he smiles. Our job simply is to find out what he's smiling about. What do you know about your plans for me that I don't yet know? And what is my assignment for today to get us one step further?
I love it. Wake up and take instructions each day and be obedient and build the muscle. I like it. Well, Claire, can't thank you enough for being with us today.
Yeah, it seems like we're going to need another hour, Claire. We got more stories. Yeah, I'm thinking, Jeff, the title of this podcast could be Hand God the Pen.
Yeah.
I think the next one we're going to have Bonnie on, Claire's wife.
Yeah.
We'll that's an even better story, idea.
Her perspective.
We'll get the real story out of Bonnie.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great.
Hey, thank you for joining us also, Cheryl and Jeff. And Claire, once again, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks everybody for being with us on this week's Generous Business Owner podcast. Check out the YouTube channel and generousbusinessowner.com and sign up for the newsletter. Jeff, any parting words?
No, thanks for joining us today on the Generous Business Owners podcast.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Generous Business Owner podcast with Jeff Thomas, Alan Barnhart, and Jeff Rutt. Make sure to follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode. You can find the guest contact information in the show notes. Stay tuned for the next episode.